Well, good morning.
Good morning.
Isn't that a wonderful Christmas Eve service?
Yeah.
Somebody told me once that the Christmas Eve service is symbolic of the previous year, and so naturally I get more anxious before the Christmas Eve service. That's going to be telling. But if that's so, then that was certainly telling that we've had a good year this year, because that was a wonderful service. And now we begin to look at the next year, and I thought I'd title the sermon Resolution. And then somebody who loves me dearly said, "No, you didn't do that." But I did, because sometimes I think that the truth comes out and then we try to take it back. Or our true wishes come out and we take it back. Or we say something and it gets to our mind and gets ready to come out, and then we have some other voice in our head that says, stop, don't say that. And I remember once when I was in a group and I shared that I was an adult, and I was sharing a story about when I was in Sunday school class in high school, and I shared that I felt like contributing something in the Sunday school class, and then a voice said, "No, don't do that, that'll sound stupid." So I had to wrestle with those inner demons and still wrestle with those inner demons at times. And then the person that was running the group said, "That's one of the most evil things that I have heard. One of the most evil things I have heard. Here comes from within me, in essence, in a Sunday school classroom, something I want to contribute to the group and I want to contribute to life. And somehow in my mind comes this voice that says, stop. Don't contribute to what's spontaneously coming from you. Don't contribute to what was really an appropriate contribution to that group. Stop. Don't do that." And she said, "That was evil." Was it evil? That who we are, the best of who we are at times, and what we want to contribute, how we want to potentialize ourselves, how we want to tell the world who we are, how we want to contribute to a group who we are, and we begin to do that, and a voice in our head says, stop, don't do that, because we have some fear that what we want to contribute, we have some fear that who we are is not going to be accepted, not going to be welcomed, and that'll create problems where we are, and it would have created problems in that group. So I'm going to lean back toward, this is a revolution, not resolution. And resolutions are also revolutions if this is the case. A resolution that we make during for the next year, and usually we make with best intentions, if we can manage our lives to accomplish this resolution, I want to stop drinking pop with sugar. I want to stop doing this. I want to stop doing that. I want to stop doing this. I want to start doing this. If we can do it by management and managing our lives, then indeed it is a resolution. However, if we make promises to ourselves and we can't do it, then we need an inner revolution. It's not a resolution. It takes more force, it takes more power, it takes more energy, it takes more focus to accomplish those tasks. So I want to touch on four areas. If you determine that what you're about this year is indeed a revolution, I want to touch on four areas that I think will help with that. And they may seem like they're not connected, but I think they are connected. And those four areas are, first, I call it, and it's called the ethic of the other. The second area is letting go of that which diminishes who I am. that I have to let go of that which diminishes who I am. The fourth is a sense of radical obedience. And I know when I say that in Unitarian Universalist context, radical obedience, everybody's going, obedience to what? What's he talking about now? That's a theological term that usually means radical obedience to a doctrine or to a creed. But I'm going to radical obedience. And the fourth is, how do we honor the space between us? How do we begin to understand we are as creatures that are connected to one another with the space between us? This ethic of the other, this recognition that there is another human being outside of me that's not me, that has his or her own dreams, his or her own wishes, his or her own way that they want to be in this world, that on many levels has nothing to do with me. How do I come to terms with that? How do I understand this other person? In reading, a philosopher says, you can really tell that there is another when you look in the other person's face. And turn right now and look in the person's face that's next to you or around you. Look at their face. Just really look at their face. Easy or difficult to really look at another person's face? The Celtic spiritual teacher we read earlier, John Donahue, several weeks ago, says that it is in the face-to-face context that creation occurs, is that when we look at one another's faces, that life and intimacy happens, that we look at one another's faces, we get a glimpse at the depth of who that person is, and we get a glimpse at the infinity in which that person belongs, and we begin to recognize that that person is indeed other than who I am, looking at the face of the other. When you combine that with that concept of the space between us, that adds a different element. Because now, when I'm beginning to look at the face of the other, I have to be concerned with, because now the minister's telling you, you have to be concerned with this, that's why you have to be concerned with it. You have to be concerned with, what is it that I put in the space between me and the other? What is it if I'm looking at a woman that comes from me that gets in the space that understands woman for a specific woman and also generalized woman in this culture? What is it that I put in between me and that person that creates a filter in how I'm going to understand that person before that person even speaks to me? Before I even know anything at all about that person, what have I already put in the space between me and that person? What do I understand about woman? What do I understand about man? What do I understand about humankind? What do I understand about race? What do I understand about homosexuality? What do I understand about heterosexuality? What do I understand about myself? What is it that I contribute to that space between me and that other person that actually distorts who that other person is? My first call from this idea of the ethic of the other, my first call in organizing my spiritual life is to recognize that I do indeed project filters in front of me, or how I understand the world, between me and the other person, and that filter begins to narrow my focus on whom I'm going to allow that person to be. Because what happens is, when I project those filters out there and I project how I understand men, I project how I understand women, I project how I understand friendship, I project how I understand this world, when I do that, I begin to narrow what I'm going to let come toward me. I begin to shape who that person is going to be for me. That attitude is the attitude of a hyper-individualistic culture that values the rights of the single person. It doesn't value the rights of the other. It values the rights of my worldview. It doesn't value the rights of a diversity of worldviews. It doesn't value the other. It values my perception of the other. So now we come to the term that we will have some difficulty with, I think, radical obedience, and anybody who has authority issues, and I am one, and I do come by it honestly. I can remember my father at his retirement from the union, who's a steelworker, district director union, so he had been president of a union, and then he was district director, so he had risen the ranks, and every rank he went through, there were authority people over him, and at his retirement party, they were all there, the people that were over him honoring his retirement. And in his talk, he said, "Never did trust authority. Never did trust anybody out here," pointing to the people. And they all laughed, and they all said, "Yeah, that's true, right?" So I do come by it honest, but I think we should all have some of that in us to question authority. And probably in talking to the choir at this particular point, not just the choir, but to the choir, to larger choir at this particular point. But if we begin to put the idea of questioning authority in the context of this ethic of the other, I must also consider the authority as another and begin to weed out my prejudices and my biases and to try to understand that person. And just for an example, on the surface, I'm very disappointed in what's happened with the health care reform bill and all that. And I haven't even really read it all, but just the propaganda and the spin, I'm really disappointed. And I read something this morning about Rahm Emanuel when the Clintons, really at that point, tried to get the health care reform through. And he said, "I learned one thing during that time. You don't go against the insurance companies." Okay, so what does that mean? If he knew that going in, well, then his idea was we've got to negotiate with the insurance companies not to deal with their customer base. As a matter of fact, we're going to deliver them more customers so that we can get some of what we want. And that was the best we were going to be able to do. And he knew that going in, he was going to disappoint the progressive base and the more liberal base. What does that do to my preconceived idea that they could have done more than that and they did not accomplish my expectations? So now I'm angry about that and I'm going to start writing op-eds and because of my anger, I have to breathe and say, was this the best that could have happened in this context? Did his history bring wisdom with him that we got something that's good and something that can be built on, but not what I wanted? Can I let go of my passion and my anger about not having the public option and whatever I would conceive that to be, and take a deep breath and let that go? We face it every day when we read information, we bring information in. We face, what is it that we project between ourselves and the others and the propaganda we hear and the paper that we read? Then I begin to understand that if I don't clear that up, all I am doing is projecting between me and the other, the person, the party, the newspaper, the church, the seven principles, is a structure that keeps me the way I am. I project a structure in front of me that prevents me from changing and going through transformation when I do that. How do we do that? How do I really shift from an ethic of hyper-individualism being raised in a culture that values the rights of the individual and our civil liberties, a high value in the rights of the individual, and have bought that hook, line, and sinker to the point was that we have created a nation that has corporations who are actually citizens and have citizens' rights, and they can do things that we think is harmful, and yet we have no legal right to protest because of the right of the individual. How do I deal with that? How do I change my mind to think the other, the ethic of the other? How do I begin to recognize that? And I think this is where that term radical obedience can come in and help us. If I'm in a story, and we are all in a story, we live a story. We live plots given to us by our parents, by our uncles, by our aunts, by our newspaper, by the history, the myth that we live in. We live in a story, and for the most part, we just carry that story on, and we go along our way. And we don't really want to be bothered a lot of times, because if we're not comfortable, we want to be bothered, maybe change it. But if not, we just move along, and we're in a story. In that story, from this perspective, there is no radical obedience in that story. I'm just being obedient to the structures, the myths, the paradigms, the plots, the storyline of that story I'm in. My life energy is contributing to that process as I go through time, and when I die, I will have been a person who's moved through, contributed to that storyline, supported that storyline, without even thinking about it, without even thinking about obedience. I am being obedient to a particular story. Radical obedience means that I come to consciousness of that. And I work to step out of that story and look at it. And I can say either yes to that story, yes to parts of that story, no to other parts of that story, begin to navigate my way through, or I can say, I cannot believe I have spent the first half of my life living that value system, and I just want to get away from it. And I leave and I begin to look or even develop my own story that I can come to. The radical obedience is a process that steps out of the story. You get out of the river, you get onto the bank, and you begin your process in another story, or you choose another story to live in. But the radical obedience, and this is where it takes intentionality and a strong will, strong force to say, I'm going to join this other story, and I'm going to make the values of this other story my values, and I'm going to contribute my life energy to that story. When I do that, I am definitely going to have an energy to pull me back to the old story. My family, my friends, my previous community will also pull me back to that old story. So that's why we call that radical obedience. Because I'm going to be radically obedient to my own desires and expectations, not somebody else's. The ethic of the other. The space in between myself and the other. I was walking around the pond the other day, and I shared some stories about that, and I bumped into this fella sitting on his bike, and we were talking, and so in line with the space in between ourselves and other people. And we started talking about alligators and birds, and it was cold, and there weren't as many birds there, and you can't see the alligators because they got to be probably a little deeper in the warm water. So we're having a real kind of nature conversation. And then I usually, at that point, I caught myself, I usually would say, I'm going to have to go get back to the real world. It was part of my line. Right? And then I thought, no, I'm not going to say that. That was a good counter will. I was countering another evil that had been internalized earlier. I said, no, I'm not going to say that. I'm going to go back to some of that false world I've created. And I don't know what he must have thought I was a real loon. Loon, bird. I just thought I was a real loon. When I said that, he laughed, kind of knowing what I meant. And then I thought, when I say I'm here looking at, you know, birds and hearing birds and things and snakes and alligators, see all kinds of things around that pond. You know, even there, there's a space between me and where I am. Even there. And I caught myself, and when I said, I've got to get back to the real world, in a way, I was revealing what I put in that space between me and what I was looking at. I discounted. I didn't give it as much power. I didn't allow it to have its voice. I said, I'm other than that. I'm not that. I'm other than that. Which is really a lie. Because I'm part of that. I'm part of the alligators, the water, the snake, the grass, the trees. I mean, I'm just another being among other beings in that way. But I caught myself and I started thinking about, it is so ingrained to separate ourselves from that of which we are a part. Just in a casual conversation, I get a hint that even all the work that I've done in an offhand comment on departing and using that as parting, help me part from another person, I would say I'm going to get back to the real world to discount my experience at that moment in time. My challenge to myself and to all of us, and in January we're going to be talking more about the space in between and how to understand it, is that as you go from this place, and as you engage others and engage yourself, how do you become aware of the space between? How do you become aware that, okay, when I enter this room, there's a space between me and this other person? Let me just feel and watch the energy that occurs between myself and this other person. What energy do I bring to this space? What energy do I bring here? When I enter this church, what energy do I bring? What energy do I bring and put between the space between me and the minister, me and the person sitting next to me? When I ask you all to go through that exercise of looking one another in the face, what did you put in the space between that request and looking at the other person's face? And that will begin that self-discovery process when I start asking, what do I put in that space? What do I bring to that space? Before I even get to the point of what's coming toward me or what the other person's bringing toward me, what do I do? What do I bring to this space that's between me and the other person? When I hear an idea, when I look at nature, what do I put in that space? And we can begin to work as a community and as individuals to be more intentional about what we put in the space between ourselves and others. And I think to accomplish the resolutions and the revolution, if we decide to change our inner world, that will be a key component, is to begin to become conscious of the space between ourselves and others and what we put in that space. So this year, let us honor the space between ourselves and others.